The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I'm listening to everything Ramin said, and congratulations. And I'm just bringing it back to your Eric Holder segment. And what's wrong with us that this man, that half his country, if you just watched 25 minutes of this show, you would go, this is a despicable human being. Forget anything else. It's just, and yet somehow, large swath of this country is okay with it. What does it say about us? I'm running out of things to denigrate Donald Trump about. I'm running out of things to talk about what a bad human being he is. You could just talk for 9 hours. I'm not even going to list it. And I'm just, what's wrong with us? What is wrong with us, Nicole?
We could not resist that clip this morning. Donnie Deutsch exploding, having some introspection. What's wrong with us? We're the problem. So much to unpack in that clip. I had to start with it. It's so humorous. First, there's the shout out to Ramin Sotoudeh, the author of the Ladies Who Punch. They're that desperate, and there's the congratulations to Ramin for writing his new book. They're that desperate that they're going to Ramin to get the sound bites about how Donald Trump couldn't remember that he had met Ramin, I think I'm saying that right, Ramin, whatever, couldn't remember that he had met him. And then the big, big reveal from Ramin was that Donald Trump excused himself from the interview to go deal with the Afghanistan. This has gone on for 9 years that they have been trying to get anything on Donald Trump, that they're so desperate, they will interview people who have not even interacted with Donald Trump, who have just sat in the room with him, and they're on the show, they're on MSNBC to give their analysis about the aura in the room and how Donald Trump made you feel. That's how desperate they are. 9 years, and then just watch 25 minutes of our show. I can confidently say I have never in my whole life watched 25 minutes consecutively of MSNBC. That is a tall ask. He says, just give us 25 minutes. This is all they talk about. He says, I could talk about it for 9 hours. You do. That's the whole show, is that. I'm running out of things to denigrate Donald Trump about. I'm running out of things to talk about what a bad human being he is. 9 years. This Donald Trump has been investigated more than any man on earth. They will find it. They got Cassidy Hutchinson to talk about the clavicles. There is no depth. They'll go to any depth to talk about Donald Trump. And then what's wrong with us? Maybe it's Trump derangement syndrome. Maybe, Donnie, that's the problem. Your show is unwatchable. Just 25 minutes. 25 minutes to change your mind. A very tall ask. Welcome back to The Trumpet Daily. I'm Sam Livingston. I will be your guest host on today's show. Any comments for the show, send those to td@thetrumpet.com. Follow us on Rumble. Give us the thumbs up, as Mr. Fleury likes to say. We need to get a meme picture with Donald Trump doing his thumbs up pose, and then our Rumble channel next to it. Don't forget about Celtic Throne. They performed last night in Colorado Springs. There's some feedback that we'll play for you. If not on today's show, probably tomorrow. Follow the tour at CelticThrone.com. I believe after Colorado Springs last night, they're now on their way to Southern California. So if you're in those areas, check out the website. Make sure you buy tickets to go see Celtic Throne. I wanted to briefly mention the Trumpet brief, or the morning brief from this morning from Mr. Palmer. If you're not subscribed to that, subscribe to that. It's really valuable, giving you big worldview news and helps you keep up with a lot of things that, I mean, just aren't really reported on in U.S. news. He talks about the more fallout between Netanyahu and the Obama administration, and then this story about Hezbollah and Iran pushing up against Europe, calling out Germany's bluff, even threatening to attack Cyprus. And Mr. Palmer has some really good analysis in that short brief just about how Hezbollah and Iran are calling out Germany's bluff, exposing Germany in a lot of ways. Mr. Palmer says, Hezbollah responded yesterday to news that Israel has approved war plans against Lebanon, threatening to fight Israel with no rules and no ceilings. Unusually, it also threatened Cyprus, warning opening Cypriot airports and bases to the Israeli enemy to target Lebanon would mean that the Cypriot government is part of the war, and the resistance will deal with it as part of the war. Mr. Palmer says, Cyprus is not a part of NATO, so war with Cyprus would not mean war with the United States, but it is a member of the EU, which also has a mutual defense pact. Attacking Cyprus would risk war with Germany. And then he points you to a lot of what Mr. Fleury has written about this conflict. Huge developments in the Middle East, things you have to follow. Keep up with the morning brief and read those articles from Mr. Gerald Fleury to get the big picture view, the prophetic view that you need to understand where those events are leading. Back to Joe Biden, back to the Trump derangement syndrome. This is an article I wanted to go through, and it's from a Democrat. It's from a young Democrat. He doesn't say what his age is, but he's writing this article in The Hill about why he's not going to be voting for Joe Biden. Why Joe Biden has lost him. And if he's this vocal and outspoken about it, how many others are there to follow? The article's titled, Why Biden is Losing Young Democrats Like Me. He talks about his history with the Democrat Party. He says, I was knocking on doors for President Obama and local Democrats in 2012, even before I could vote. So this isn't just some passive Democrat. I mean, he was active in the party. He says, Biden is currently sitting on top of a seismic shift in the political party's voting coalitions. His average approval rating, under 38%, unfortunately, is historically low for a president at this time in a first term. In 2020, Biden won young votes by 25 points. Excuse me. He writes, beyond Biden's personal cognitive challenges, his administration's policies are having indefensible consequences. Later on, he says, nuclear war is now more probable than at any time since the Cuban Missile Crisis. He says, at home, the future looks dire for middle-class and low-income Americans. Most people worry about how we'll deal with this historic inflation and the mounting federal debt. So all of these Biden policies, if you're objective, if you're rational, if you're realistic, there's no reason you would vote for him. I mean, 3 or 4 years have proven that. If your eyes are open to see that affliction. This author says, in the meantime, an imminent national security risk has been generated by the border crisis. Talks about the flood of immigrants that Biden just opened the doors for. I mean, these are not difficult stories to comprehend. I mean, you see it all the time. You see it more and more in neighborhoods. In Europe, they send a lot of these migrants into small villages, small towns. It totally changes the dynamic of these towns. And it's making a lot of these rural voters, it's making a lot of these swing state voters in America more hostile to the regime, as they should be. But everybody's seeing it. It's not even just something that you read about on the internet or just watch on the news anymore. This article, he concludes, Biden's supporters may say that none of these issues are dispositive because they pale in comparison to President Trump's threat to democracy. This is all they have. This is Donnie Deutsch. What's wrong with us? All you talk about is Trump's attack on democracy, and it's just this vague thing that there's nothing concrete about it. And again, rational people are going to look at that and say, that's not accurate. That clearly, you hate this man. Biden's supporters, it says, yet if protecting American democracy is a top priority, as it should be, then we all must be alarmed by the unprecedented prosecution of a presidential candidate on novel legal theories in the middle of a campaign. Regardless of what the appellate court decides, the political weaponization of prosecutorial discretion is anti-democratic and disconcerting. This is, everybody sees it. The mask is off. There's no hiding that that Bragg case was, we're just upholding the rule of law. They all see it because they know that Clinton did something far, far worse and wasn't indicted for it, wasn't prosecuted for it. And all of these Democrats, it's plain as day to see if the system was rigged against them, if the DOJ, you know, hated them, it could very easily go after them. Instead, it's a little fine or it doesn't even get mentioned. And people see that. Who wants to live in a system like that? Mr. Fleury talked about how America is becoming Soviet America yesterday. Nobody likes to live in the Soviet Union. No one wants to see their country turn into that. And in contrast, I mean, all they can say is Donald Trump's a threat to democracy. And then they'll say things like, well, he has no concrete plans for America. Donald Trump has very concrete plans. Mr. Fleury referenced that Project 2025 the other day. That's a 900-page document that lays out what a Donald Trump cabinet will do for this country. Democrats are panicking because of how organized his campaign is this year around. They're panicking about how good his poll numbers are. This article concludes, many voters in the younger generations are thinking about these various crises and their consequences for the rest of the 21st century when evaluating Biden's administration. Not just one issue like some suggest. They are looking for a president who can stand up to the corporate lobbies and transcend partisanship to execute meaningful reform. Biden demonstrably is not that president. It's obvious for everyone to see, and he's losing these critical voting blocks, young people, minorities, Latinos, blacks, he's losing all of them. And it doesn't take a lot to swing over. he won, quote unquote, 2020. I think it comes down to about 40,000 votes across, I think it's Wisconsin, Georgia, and Arizona. I mean, if you add up the difference in those vote, in those states, to get them to swing over to Donald Trump, again, just saying if the votes were actually accurate there, you don't need to get a lot of people to swing over to your side. And Democrats know it. They're panicking. He has more than enough, as we'll cover in a couple more of these articles. This is the Wall Street Journal. These are Wall Street Journals. Everyone's going to say it's more center, but a lot of their columns, they're definitely left-wing or full-on rhino. This article, Wall Street Journal, Hollywood, Joe Biden's celebrity party. It was simply realpolitik that required President Biden to leave Vice President Kamala Harris to deal with a summit in Switzerland on ending the Ukraine war, while he flew from the Group of Seven in Europe to a Hollywood fundraiser with George Clooney and Julia Roberts. You do what you gotta do. I mean, this is the biggest geopolitical issue happening right now is the war in Ukraine. Biden's over in Italy. They're gonna have a meeting about how to end this, and he leaves Kamala Harris to deal with it. And they're not taking this seriously because he's gotta run over to yuck it up with the Hollywood elite, his biggest donor base now at this point. I mean, that was, we've talked about it for years. Obama loved Hollywood. I mean, his White House was East Hollywood, Hollywood of the East Coast. He had celebrities in there all the time. Biden has to leave this big summit so he can rush over to the big glitzy Hollywood fundraiser and pull in another $30 million. This Wall Street Journal article says, less easy to duck was the impression of a Democratic Party drowning in Hollywood glitz. The party's public image is almost wholly defined by celebrities, and that's not good for winning general elections. You might have seen these videos. I don't know who organizes them, but all the celebrities come in and they start crying, and then it cuts, jump cuts to where they finish each other's sentences. Very, very difficult to watch. Very hard stuff. I mean, Donnie Deutsch is asking for 25 minutes of MSNBC. Try to find one of those videos and give it a minute and see if you can make it through that. But all of that stuff just alienates. I mean, these people are so disconnected from normal people, so disconnected from Americans. They live in this bubble. The Journal says, the Democrats' rejoinder is, give us a break. Donald Trump is the most unalloyed celebrity ever associated with the presidency or politics. True, but that isn't the Democrats' problem. The list of celebrities joined to the Democratic hip runs forever. But the Republicans, once past Mr. Trump, no one associates the GOP with shiny people. In the popular telling among sophisticates, the Republicans, whether they're elected politicians or followers, could hardly be more out of it. And then they say, but notice that on the day Mr. Biden tapped the Hollywood ATM, Mr. Trump campaigned at a black church in Detroit. Biden doesn't even care. He's not even visiting these swing states. He's not trying to win anybody over. I mean, you do wonder who's running that campaign. Is that Obama trying to sabotage him? Another article, this is Politico, talks again about how unpopular a lot of these Western left-wing leaders are. Joe Biden in the United States, Macron in France, Trudeau in Canada, Rishi Sunak, I mean, he's a technically conservative in the UK, but they're not popular, and this Politico article talks about how emboldened they're getting, how desperate they're getting, and it's making them lash out. Says embattled leaders on both sides of the Atlantic are resorting to slashing attacks against their opponents, telling voters in dystopian terms about how bad things could get if their challengers win. And then I wanted to just mention that to lead into this American Spectator article. This article is titled, If Trump Wins, the Far Left's PTSD Post-Trump Social Disruption is Coming. Says, when Trump won, the far left flipped. If he wins again, they'll be even worse. I mean, you want to talk about a peaceful transition of power. That did not happen in 2016. There was a paper coup to attack Donald Trump that year. And in 2020, they were ready to put soldiers on the streets. The Democrats, we've quoted the Time magazine piece plenty of times, where they're bragging about it, fortifying the election. And they had all of the brown shirts on call that night. They were getting worried. Do we need to send out the protesters? Do we need to send them to the polling stations? Do we need to create chaos? And then there was the order that went out. Hold off. Hold off. Wait. In Allegheny County, they're gonna close the counting stations. They're gonna go to sleep at 10 p.m. Atlanta, the leaky urinal, it's stopped. We're sending everybody home. Don't send out the shock troops yet. They were ready for that war. And now in 2024, they're even more ready. They're more prepared. Where does all this money go? $30 million. I'm sure if it's they're running ads, they're going to know it's the Biden campaign, we're going to charge top dollar. But where did all the Zuckerberg money go? $400 million to just run commercials? The Spectator says, if Biden is ushered out, don't expect the far left and their demands to go with him. Not only will they stay, but their demands will be heightened from 4 years of Biden's coddling. No one pulls the far left's triggers like Trump, and Biden has raised their baseline for outrage. I mean, the tiniest thing. I mean, that 2025 project just talks about restoring family values. That was one of the pillars of that. And they're calling this an insurrectionist document. Says, should Trump win in November, it will not catch the far left by surprise like it did 8 years ago. They are already mobilized. Their demands, thanks to Biden, are at their highest levels ever. The far left's depths will match the heightened expectations Biden has raised. Wherever that disappointment takes them, and it will certainly start in the streets, America's self-styled elite will support and cover for them. America should begin bracing itself now for the far left's PTSD, post-Trump social disruption. Talking about the campaign and Biden's unpopularity. Biden, he may not be visiting, he may not be campaigning himself much, but they are playing a lot of ads. They're spending a lot of money on ads. And this Vox article, I mean, Vox is very left-wing, no fan of Trump, says Biden's ads have not been working. Now he's trying something new. This article starts, President Joe Biden's odds of re-election may be worse than they look, and they don't look great. Talking about all the polls that he's behind in. And this is them. I mean, they are in full-on campaign mode in these swing states running their advertisements. Fox says it's not surprising then that the Economist election forecast gives Trump a roughly 70% chance of victory in November. Vox, they have their anti-Trump bit, says, but they are even more disconcerting when one considers an underappreciated piece of context. Trump hasn't even begun to air campaign advertisements, while Biden has been blanketing swing state airwaves. In other words, this is what the 2024 race looks like when the president enjoys a massive advantage on paid propaganda. I mean, he's all in, and it is not impacting the polls. They have convicted Donald Trump, the convicted felon, has not changed anything. Donald Trump hasn't even been able to campaign. He's been sitting in the courtroom. I mean, wait till that shifts into high gear. Wait till after the DNC and the RNC conventions. I think the Republicans are in July. I think Democrats aren't that long after that, maybe August. This article says, as of late May, the Biden campaign was airing $13.6 million worth of ads, while the Trump campaign had yet to spend a single penny on TV spots. It's not even a contest right now. Trump's not even trying. He's way more organized, way more calculated, and the Democrats, like Donnie Deutsch says, what are we doing wrong? What's wrong with us? Just give us 25 minutes and we'll change your minds. He's probably the best thing going for Donald Trump right now. If you watch that show, how unhinged they are, and if you're just baseline somewhat normal, you're going to be repulsed by it. It's probably going to drive you to vote for Donald Trump. Maybe Donald Trump should tell everyone to go give Donnie Deutsch 25 minutes of their time and then come out of that and you tell me who's crazy. Democrats, we've talked, Mr. Stephen Fleury's talked a lot about the attack on the court this week. I mean, they are ramping it up. June is usually when all of these opinions start coming out. And think about how upset they are right now with the court, because the court is just following its regular guidelines. Why should they rush any of these cases through? What's the rush? You can't, what is that phrase? The wheels of justice move slowly. You've got to take your time on these things. Democrats don't like that. They want the court to work on their timetable. Listen to this montage from MSNBC. It's not 25 minutes, it's just 1 minute. So you should survive. This is clip 3.
It is that time of year when Donald Trump's right-wing Supreme Court waits until the very end of the term to bludgeon us with their decisions. There are 21 opinions remaining, but we are all holding our breath for one in particular that has a kind of clock ticking. Of course, that is Trump v. United States. All of the justices are, you know, adult grown human beings who can read the newspaper and know that time is of the essence in this case. 112 days have passed with nothing. No decision from the Supreme Court, no movement towards a trial that could hold Donald Trump accountable for his attempted insurrection. Now, to be clear, as we've often said on this show, the wheels of justice do move slowly, but this is not normal. As law professor Leah Lippman puts it in an opinion piece to New York Times today, something's rotten about the justices taking so long on Trump's immunity case. Members of that court, all of them knowing full well, every day they delay makes it less and less possible that Trump will stand trial for the insurrection before this next election.
All of that, I think, is more than enough indication that this court just cannot be trusted to actually follow the rules and adhere to the legal process when it comes to cases involving Donald Trump.
Now, think about in 2020 when the court would not do anything for Donald Trump and the Republicans. They did not want to step into that. Lack of standing, not going to touch it. I mean, they got to the cases really fast. I think it's Texas that brought the big one. Lack of standing, not going to touch it. And then here, they want, the Democrats want the Supreme Court in a couple of days, because it's got to happen before the election, as if the Supreme Court has to bend to their will on the timing. This huge, huge case that for over 200 years, really, the court has not wanted to touch because of how difficult it is to make this decision on presidential immunity. So they are running with their usual timeline. They released their decisions in June. Well, it's got to happen faster. They're clearly political. This is rotten. Attacking the court that they know is pro-Donald Trump, that they know is going to work in his favor, that they're worried about, will actually start making decisions on the 2024 election. Speaking of the rule of law, there, you may have seen this story yesterday where Louisiana, the governor passed this bill that says just a little poster of the Ten Commandments needs to be posted in all classrooms in the state of Louisiana. And listen to this montage of the Democrats reacting to that. Clip four.
You don't even need to look at this to see what they are. But this is actually the size. This is 11 by 14. This is what actually the size that has to be printed. Obviously, clearly legible. You can read this. And it's just notable that this is what they're saying has to be in each classroom.
Yeah.
But my first question was, you know, is requiring this regardless of size, does it violate the First Amendment?
Yes, flagrantly, in my view. If you wanted a perfect example of what the First Amendment prohibits, I think this is it. State entities can't do things that endorse any particular religion or religiosity in general. And if you look at those 10, there are some, I know one of the defenses is, well, these are themes that are consistent throughout civilized society and throughout religion. Shall not kill. Number six, I'm cheating because I'm looking. But, you know, don't kill, don't rob, don't steal, that kind of thing. But there are some commandments that are inherently religious. Observe the Sabbath day. I'm the only God that you may worship. So it's an inherently religious document.
Well, I think given the storm season is coming up, we don't need the 10 commandments. We need the Hail Mary. It would be, you know, much more appropriate for what we face with here in Louisiana. I don't know which one he's going to put up. There's 10 different versions of the Ten Commandments, and our schools are so underfunded that I'm not sure half the kids even know how to read them.
The schools in Louisiana traditionally have ranked very low in the rankings of, yeah, of schools in America. It's, I mean, is this a violation of the First Amendment's Establishment Clause, separation of church and state?
I'm very opposed to it. And it's not anything to do with disliking religion. It's just that there are different religions that exist in our communities. I think if a poster could cure what ails schools, that would have been done a long time ago. We all had posters up of rules. Somehow we are still 47th in education, and I don't know why they think this is going to be a magic bullet.
Hey kids, don't murder, don't steal, don't lie, and respect your parents. You know, that doesn't bother me. I'm not out here crusading for it. And I certainly don't think public school teachers should be preachers. But, you know, these are the fundamental tenets of Western civilization. They kind of underpin, you know, our entire criminal justice system. And there are people out here so enraged by this today who at the same time would love to use public schools and public libraries and other public facilities to distribute information that more matches their own agenda. So I think people are overreacting to this, and the courts are going to have to get involved and see what the interpretation of the laws are.
Look how they lash out at, I mean, when she held it up, it wasn't a huge poster, and there's stuff all over the walls in classrooms. When you think about, they won't stand up to the LGBTQ plus IA, whatever it is now. The man in Iowa who removed a Satan statue from a government building, he's prosecuted for doing that, for a hate crime. You bring in just a little placard of the Ten Commandments. Doesn't even say they have to teach it. Just have it on the wall. And the Democrats can't stand that. Can't have any bit of God in the classroom. And how can you vote your way out of a mess like this? In the Bible, I'm going to read this quote. I don't have a ton of time because I want to play a Key of David program. This quote about the founding fathers, and even just politicians and leaders in the 40s and 50s. I mean, you could, the Constitution is based on biblical principles, and argue that those Ten Commandments on the wall, they're part of our founding documents for this nation. Just put it on the wall. They can't even have that. Mr. Fleury writes in No Freedom Without Law, in 1954, Supreme Court Chief Justice Earl Warren wrote, "I believe the entire Bill of Rights came into being because of the knowledge our forefathers had of the Bible and their beliefs in it. What political or religious leaders would make such statements as these men did? Even the politicians who established our republic were more spiritual than most of our religious leaders today. The Constitution is the foundation of our republic, and the Ten Commandments were, in many ways, the foundation of the Constitution. Our forefathers believed that if we didn't keep God's Ten Commandments, our republic would collapse. We can't afford to take the words of our founders lightly if we want to see our nation stand." I think it's on the Supreme Court building, too, on the east side of it. There's a sculpture of Moses holding the Ten Commandments. It's about the rule of law. And again, you need people to turn to that law and obey it for it to work. I mean, that one teacher says this wouldn't cure all of our problems. Obedience to God's law would cure those problems if people would adhere to the law. Well, I said I wanted to play a Key of David program. And this is, we offer America Under Attack more than any book on this program. And you have to know the spirit behind things like that montage we just played. Why do they hate the law so much? And this program, this was aired back in April of 2014. It's titled America Under Attack. And I just thought it would be good to play this program and hear from the author of this book about the state of America. What is happening to our nation about this spirit world that few people understand? We can go ahead and skip any promo. You can just go right into playing that clip. Thank you very much for joining us on today's show. Again, email any comments to td@thetrumpet.com.
Greetings, everyone. Many authorities tell us that America is going the way of ancient Rome, but I can tell you that it's even worse than that. America is under attack from an invisible army, and I'm talking about a real army, and that could be stopped if we chose to stop it, but that doesn't look very likely. Now, there for nearly two decades, this country, America, has been under a direct attack from an invisible army in a special way. Now, that may sound a little strange to some people, but it's only strange if we don't know what's in our Bibles. It all is explained very clearly, very explicitly in your own Bible. In the British coronation ceremony, they talk about the Bible being the greatest gift that this earth affords. Now, most people today, of course, would scoff at that. Almost nobody looks upon the Bible that way today, but that's the way God looks at it. And that's the way it ought to be with all of us. You can prove all of this to yourself. I'm not asking you to believe anything that you cannot prove, and you as an individual can escape suffering that's coming upon America if you choose to do so, because God says if we heed what He says, He will honor that and He will protect us. That's a promise from God. God always warns His people. He always does that. And because God is love and everything God does is out of love. How hard that is for man to see. Even the suffering that comes upon us is coming upon us because of God's love to teach us and to help us get to know God, because we do not know Him today. We simply don't know God, and America is under attack because of that. And we need to understand why. I want to read you something that Herbert W. Armstrong wrote way back in 1956, which is not exactly what I'm talking about, but it gives you an insight into the kind of warfare that's going on against America. Notice what Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1956, and I'll just quote it to you. A psychological warfare of propaganda, infiltration, subversion, demoralization that is coming upon America, he said. That is the goal of the communists. At least he certainly believed that at the time, and so do I. But they were inflicting that kind of warfare. He continues by saying, it is a warfare that has attacked our minds and moral and spiritual values rather than our bodies and our earthly possessions. He said it's a kind of warfare we don't understand or know how to cope with. It uses every diabolical means to weaken us from within, sapping our strength, perverting our morals, sabotaging our educational system, wrecking our social structure, destroying our spiritual and religious life, weakening our industrial and economic power, demoralizing our armed forces, and finally, after such infiltration, overthrowing our government by force and violence. Now, that was the goal of the communists, and it certainly was a part of what I'm talking about today, only it is a different enemy and about 10,000 times worse. And I want to show you one. I'm talking about an earth and a universe shaking event that occurred, and I mean that literally, which led to this attack that's now coming upon America and has been very focused for nearly two decades. It is a different warfare in many ways, and I want to show you what the Bible says about that. Notice Revelation 12 and verse 7. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his demons, it should read. That's what they are, fallen angels, and prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. They're no longer did they have access to heaven. What happened? Verse 9, and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels, or demons, were cast out with him. Now, that's an end time setting, and here you have the Satan, the devil, and millions of demons cast out of heaven, out of the universe, and confined to this earth. And let me tell you, they have a great focus on the world's number one superpower, as it is called, although that's somewhat of a misnomer today. But it still is aimed at a nation that is indeed a superpower. It's just that they won't use that power. So if this army that we're talking about here fought God and left the universe scarred, all the planets scarred just about, if he fought God, well, he's not going to be afraid to fight little puny man. And he has an army. Satan has an army of millions of demons, and he is confined to this earth. And he has two priorities, and that is to destroy spiritual Israel, which he already has done, 95% of them, and then the nations of Israel, and one in particular, which is the superpower, and really represents the others in many ways. Satan is not afraid to fight because he knows he has nothing to lose. Now, I have written a booklet that's almost new. I think I've offered it a couple of times on television. But it explains all this in stark detail where you can understand what is happening in America. Many people look at what's happening and say, well, they've never seen anything happen like this in America before. They've never seen it. Well, it's never been there before. I'm telling you, it hasn't ever been there before. This is something very different, And the only way we're ever going to understand it is to understand our Bibles. The greatest gift afforded by this earth. Indeed, it is. If we understand it. But if we don't understand it, well, it's not of any value. It's not of any value at all. But all you have to do is study this booklet and you'll understand what I'm talking about in detail. And I hope I can explain quite a lot of that to you today. But Satan has been cast down. This is an end time prophecy. But when did that happen? Now, really, let's be honest here, because if you're talking about Satan and millions of demons and they were cast to this earth and are now confined to this earth, somebody had to know when it happened. The very elect of God had to know because they were victims of it. They had to know when that happened. You can't have something like that happen and not be aware of it if you're aware of what's happening spiritually in this world. You cannot. Notice verse 12. Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea. Even of the sea, you see, because it's so bad. For the devil has come down unto you having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time. See, they're rejoicing in heaven because they're kicked out forever. But Satan is making one final stand here on this earth before God casts him into outer darkness forever. And then there will be peace brought to this earth like it never has even dreamed of. And that's coming, and I'm talking about in just a tiny few years. It's coming. But you see, this is talking about a short time. Well, why does Satan know he has a short time? When he's cast down, he knows almost just a short time after that, Jesus Christ is going to return to this earth and he's going to be cast off his throne. Remember, he is the God of this world. 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. He's going to be cast off that throne and replaced by Jesus Christ, who qualified to replace him. And Christ is going to rule this world and stop the nuclear madness and bring this world peace and joy forever and ever and ever. Now that's prophesied in your Bible many, many times. It's prophesied there. So you see in America a breakdown of all these values that Mr. Armstrong was talking about. Now that even in 1956, that was caused and really inspired and motivated by Satan the devil. But it's 10,000 times worse today, at least it's many times worse, because Satan and his demons are now cast down to this earth and they can't even go out into the universe anymore. Now, you know this earth has to suffer from that. There has to be great suffering from that. That's what you're seeing in America and in Britain and in the Jewish nation in the Middle East and other nations. But primarily, it's happening, well, let's say it's happening most intensely inside Israel's superpower. And if you don't know who Israel is, well, you can't know, you can't even understand Bible prophecy. And our book on the United States and Britain in prophecy has been given away for years and explains all of that and tells us who Israel is. Then verse 13, and when the dragon saw that he was cast into the earth, he persecuted the woman. Woman is a symbol of a church. In this case, God's church. He persecuted the woman immediately, which brought forth the man child. This is God's own church that brought forth the baby Jesus. And that makes it very special. But when Satan was cast down, the very first thing he did was attack God's church, spiritual Israel. But then secondly on that list is the nations of Israel, and one in particular, that is the superpower in America. And of course, if they go down, all Israel goes down. That's basically what it amounts to. But look, this verse right here dates this. It dates this prophecy and tells you what happened so you can know exactly where we are in Bible prophecy. If you're spiritual, you know when this happened. If you're God's very elect, you know when Satan and the demons by the millions were cast to this earth. You have to know that. And otherwise, how could you proclaim God's message if you didn't? Well, anyhow, 95% of God's people were destroyed. Their faith was destroyed. Their morals and spiritual values were destroyed, or at least they're dying, God says in 2 Thessalonians 2. But that didn't happen to 5% of God's people who continued to be loyal and proclaim the message of God, the same message that Herbert W. Armstrong proclaimed for over 50 years. Now, it's talking about the destruction of a nation and nations after a church has been destroyed. You can read that. I'm just going to paraphrase some of it to you so that you can go and read it later. But Daniel 8 talks about that. Verse 17 talks about the last end, the very last little end of this end time. And Daniel is only for this end time. That book is. It's only for that. But it talks about an Antiochus there a type of Antiochus who comes into the church, and because of the transgression inside the church or the lawlessness inside the church, Satan used a man to take over the church. Now that's in your Bible, and this booklet will prove that to you very forcefully and in a way that you won't forget it. But I just want to read verse 12 of Daniel 8 to you. And an host, that is a demon army, was given him against the daily, or God's work, by reason of transgression. And it says he cast down the truth to the ground. The values, the spiritual values that make a church God's church, he cast those down and wrecked God's church when he was cast down to this earth. Now, that has happened, and we'll show you that very clearly. But I just wanted to point out there that, look, this is an army of demons, and they have awesome power. If we don't have greater power coming from God, and if we don't have that power, then we're going to be overwhelmed by the power of Satan and his demon army. That's the lesson. Now, if that happened to spiritual Israel, what about the nations of Israel? Listen, you don't have that kind of massive destruction come upon a church unless it's coming from the top down. Satan got a man in at the very top, and his fellows, it says, and this kind of destruction began, and they destroyed all the real values of the church of God. That's what he's talking about. Now, I'm going to paraphrase something else to you, but over in 2 Thessalonians 2, I'll just, verse 3, you can read that, where it talks about a great falling away from the church of God, and that man of sin is going to be revealed, that son of destruction, who is a type of Judas Iscariot, who became demon-possessed. And it goes on to talk about this great falling away, but it wasn't going to happen until verse 7 says, "For the mystery of lawlessness is already at work, only he who now restrains it will do so until he is out of the way." Or the King James says it, "until he is taken out of the way." Here is a man that when he's taken out of the way, a man in God's own church, and when he's taken out of the way, Satan is going to be cast down. Now, that's a specific man and a specific time. God gives us specific scriptures, and yet how many people really understand this? Well, let me tell you, very few, because it's about lawlessness. Lawlessness, that's what it's all about. That spirit of iniquity or lawlessness, that's what that means. And that's what you're seeing happen inside the nation of America today. Lawlessness. Lawlessness. and destruction of values that meant so much to this nation when it was established. We established this nation, believe it or not, to have the very rule of God on this earth. That was the goal of those those pioneers who began this nation called America, began building it the way we see it is today. But I'll tell you this, when that army strikes, it does all kinds of damage. Now let's look at verse 14, where it talks about the nations of Israel being attacked, and America in particular. Now this could be stopped, you see. God is telling us how to stop it. But will we stop it? I don't see any signs of that, do you? But any individual can stop it in his own life and be protected by God. Notice verse 14, God promises this. And to the woman, or the church of God, the very elect here, were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent. First of all, I want you to see that God protects his people that are loyal to him, and then get his message out to the world. God is real. God is alive. The trouble is, people don't believe that, and they won't believe it because of their lawlessness. They enjoy their lawlessness, and look at the trouble it's bringing upon this land. But if you look at this now in the context here, this is in the context of Satan and the demons being cast to this earth and being confined to this earth. So I'll just read you a little from the America Under Attack booklet. I wrote, the Bible describes the church as spiritual Israel. When Satan was cast down, he immediately went after spiritual Israel. That was his first target, but he didn't stop there. After that, he directed his attack against physical Israel. And that's actually the United States, Britain, and the Jewish state in the Middle East, primarily the two birthright nations and the scepter nation. But there's one in particular that Satan is working on, and that is the superpower of Israel that has had a lot to do with helping Britain and the Jewish nation survive. And they've helped each other. But I go on to write here, what happened in that church shows you something of a blueprint for what Satan began to do in three nations. That is why that church history is so relevant and important for you to grasp. And then just a little more from this booklet. But again, note the chronology here. After the devil attacked the church in verse 13 and devastated it and destroyed the people's faith, he continues his destructive rampage on a larger scale until God has to take his faithful people to a place of safety, most of them in that superpower nation. That also tells you that the devil is attacking the nations of Israel. Three in particular, and that attack leads up to the great tribulation, you see, which God is warning us about and in his love so that we can avoid that. But we're not going to avoid it. It appears until quite a lot of suffering has been occurring. And then I continued there, so even though this passage doesn't explicitly mention physical Israel, Satan's attack on the U.S., Britain, and Israel is the subtext. Satan must have attacked the nations, again, trying to destroy all the values of the nation, and that will bring the nation down. Our values from the past, our Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land, much of it based on the Bible. And you see people that are so hostile and hateful toward the Constitution today, even when they might be saying otherwise, they show by their fruits that they're hostile to the supreme law of the land, which is talking about lawlessness. That's all it's talking about, and I'll show you a little bit more about that if I have time. He attacked the nations of Israel. This means these nations are in serious trouble. It's so bad that the woman has to flee to be protected by God from the serpent. You see, and it's so bad where she is in, well, most of them in the superpower nation, but also in the other nations as well, and even around the world. The one commentator said we're being led into, the West is being led into an abyss. And that is so true. But also, Melanie Phillips said this, the problem is there's malice against what? Against the West and also against the ancient civilization that lies at the heart of its moral code. That is the Judeo-Christian values that we've had for so many years. And there is malice in this land toward that. And she's exactly right. Exactly right. How many people do you see that have that kind of malice and that kind of hatred, and they don't know what they're doing, and they don't know what's inspiring and stirring and motivating them? And they don't know often what they're talking about. They just simply do not know. And you can go on to see in Colossians 2 and verse 18 that this is all about worshiping the will of man. That's lawlessness. That's what happened to the church. They began to worship the will, which is the worshiping of demons, it says in verse 18 and 23 of Colossians 2. And that's exactly what's happening in the land today. We're worshiping the will, not the law, not the Constitution, that is based on many biblical values that are there for all eternity. So that's the way Hitler deceived Germany. He said, look, there's this magic interpretation. And when he was telling the people that in World War II, there's this magic interpretation of the will, not the intellect. But it wasn't even logical. But he said, there's just a magic interpretation. What he's talking about is Satan and demonism. That's what it was all about. How long will it take us to see? Isaiah says in verse 4 of chapter 1 that we have forsaken the Lord. We've gone away backward. Everything is backward and upside down. And oh, the destruction it's bringing upon this land. You see, it's not some radical group's fault. They're just leading the way. The radicals and those who are lawless, they're just leading the way. But the fault is in the American people. They're not living according to God's way of life. They've forsaken Him. They're turning away backward and getting rid of the values that make any nation strong and destroy any nation that continues to practice such lawlessness. You see, it's only God that can save America or any other nation. That's what we have to understand. Until next week, this is Gerald Fleury. Goodbye, friends.